Hello, gardeners. Welcome to In the Garden, hosted by UC Master Gardeners. I'm Mark Fairley, your host today. Now, just getting a little business done, you are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. And the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the Board of Regents. For more information, go to KUCI.org. Now, our show today will be called Specialty Vegetable Gardening. And we will have a guest today, a special guest, as a matter of fact. His name is Greg Stevenson. And he is also a master gardener. Welcome, Greg.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Greg, I'm really looking forward to this. And I've known you for a few years. Mm-hmm. How long have you been a master gardener?
I actually went through the program in 2013. So I'm part of the graduating class of 2013.
Wonderful. And how did you get involved in gardening?
Actually, it was through my wife. Let me back up and say that even before I got into gardening, I found it very relaxing just going out with a weed tool and pulling up weeds, because I'm a programmer by profession. And it's, you know, that can be kind of high stress and so on. So it was just nice not doing a white-collar thing, doing a blue-collar thing in that. But my wife got into green smoothies, so we would go out and buy things, usually in bulk at Costco, but by the time before we were able to use them all up, they would go bad.
And, understand.
And yes. So I decided that, you know, this stuff I could probably grow, so I started doing some research, got involved in square foot gardening, which is how we met.
That's correct.
That's sort of how I got my start, and then that has since become a passion of mine, growing edible.
Well, I know you do a lot of this, and you're very innovative and very analytical in many ways.
Yes, I'm very much a gardening geek.
Because you have come up with a number of different methods, and when it comes to gardening, vegetable gardening, there's a lot of science involved, and when you use the science to better your garden, what are you going to get?
Hopefully more and better quality food.
Sometimes. But as we know with gardeners, not all of the time.
No.
But today we want to talk about a few things like that. And in your impression of gardening, and we're going to talk about some things that you have designed and worked on and have shown our master gardeners in our Toastmasters Club, and I've been very intrigued with what you've done.
Oh,
now,
thank you.
I don't know if those are your inventions, but I know just between you and I, we can talk about it, and our listeners, they can take notes.
Yeah.
But there are many things involving vegetable gardening today. Mm-hmm. One of them is water conservation.
Mm-hmm.
Another is soil, and how we can combine those things to help achieve our goal of of growing great vegetables.
Yes.
For our own consumption, not necessarily for the consumption of the whole neighborhood, but by growing our own, there are a lot of advantages.
Absolutely.
Not only cost, but to our brain, as you have already said, it's relaxing, it's a breakaway, and getting our hands dirty is a good thing. Now, pulling weeds is not my enjoyment. In fact, I can remember as a kid, my dad and mom had a victory garden, And I was the oldest kid, so I'm the one that got to weed the doggone thing. Probably stopped me from gardening for many years, but I did get involved. And with square foot gardening, there's not a lot of weeds.
No, but there they are. There are, I say, virtually no weeds as opposed to no weeds. Compared to a traditional garden, it's significantly less.
Right.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk about soil for a moment? How important is that in our creation of great vegetables?
Soil I consider pretty important. I take it very seriously, and because I'm a gardening geek, I also do a lot of experimentation on different types of soil, different types of compost and that.
Sure.
I do, for the most part, like the square foot gardening soil, which is not really anything unique. Almost any soil blend that you find will be usually one of these three ingredients if it's a potting soil mix. And
sure.
The classic square foot gardening soil is 1/3 peat moss, and that's almost the primary ingredient on most potting soil mixes. 1/3 vermiculite, which is unique. There's usually one of three things that are used in potting soil: vermiculite, pumice, or perlite. Perlite is usually what you find in manufactured soils because it's the lightest and the cheapest for them to do. Vermiculite is the best. It has what they call a high cation exchange ratio, where the other two components do not, pumice and perlite in particular. And that's very good for holding the nutrients in the soil so it doesn't pass through and wash out. And so that's a very significant thing. Holds a lot of water, that second ingredient. And then a good blend, the third ingredient, 1/3, is a good blended compost.
What do you mean by blended compost?
That's just like we get our nutrition. If we ate just the same thing every single day, we're not going to have a balanced diet. And this is where the plants get their nutrition from, is for a large part from this compost. So we want to have a variety of different composts that we can blend together, usually five or more. And I usually try to have six or seven different things, sources, and then I mix them all together. And that's what I call my premium compost that I then use 1/3 of that in my soil mixture used for vegetables.
Now, a lot of people are composting. I mm-hmm. compost. And any recommendations about the five or more ingredients from a person that is doing their own compost? First of all,
yeah.
It's the cheapest.
Yeah. I do my own composting as well. As a matter of fact, I do two forms. I do hot composting of all my trimmings around the yard and that. So that goes right back, and I love doing that because I know the source of my stuff.
Right.
And I know it doesn't have any pesticides or anything like that because
that's
it's my own.
That's important, isn't it? Keep your pesticides out. For example, if you're using grass, don't put any pesticides
right.
on it and expect to use it as compost.
Right. So I have that, and even after I run that through, I take that and I mix it with more peat moss, some newspaper, and brown bag clippings that I shred, and then I do vermicomposting, which is composting with worms, and I use that. So 1/5 of my, or whenever I mix my compost, it's usually one part will be earthworm castings, one part will be my own compost, then I have two local sources, one that's with a horse stable, so it's a sort of a horse manure
sure.
based compost, but it is a compost, not raw manure. You want to make sure you have composted material.
And well composted.
Well composted material. Then another plant based source, and that's also from a local compost supplier. So I get those in bulk. I use a lot of compost, so I typically get that a cubic yard at a time, which fills up the back end of my tundra. So I'll get one of those. And then I use bat guano as a common one. I'll use composted chicken manure, sometimes a couple other different types of compost. But it all depends. But that rounds out everything.
Question for you:
mm-hmm.
Why does it need to be for example, chicken manure, horse manure, cow manure, why do they need to be well composted?
Well, they need to be well composted because there are two types of bacteria. One that breaks down the different parts of the what's being composted, whether it's horse manure, chicken manure, whatever, and that they put, the nitrogen, which is one of the key things
sure.
that you find, into a form that can then be used by a different form of bacteria to release that to the plants. There's sort of a symbiotic relationship between this. However, if there's too much of the raw form of nitrogen or some of the other ingredients, so it's not breaking down, the composting style bacteria, which are very good in a compost pile and doing their job and breaking it down, if they were in the soil next to your plant's roots, they would start taking all the nitrogen and nutrients and binding them and pulling them away from the plant, so the plant actually becomes
help your plant?
Yes. So we don't need that type of bacteria. We need those for breaking down the soil or the compost, but in the soil we need the other type of bacteria to be more prevalent, so it's taking those packaged forms of nitrogen and so on and making that available to the plant roots.
And likewise, some of our ingredients used are from seed-eating animals.
Yes.
And if they're not well composted, got a chance that you're going to get seeds coming up.
Yes, that's usually true. With the compost that I have, since it's horses in a stable, they're not free-range type horses, so they're not eating raw seeds and stuff like that.
So be careful where you get your compost.
And if you are doing your own composting, we typically do not compost weeds because we might not get all the seeds and stuff like that, unless they're before they've gone to the seed stage.
Good advice for our gardener listeners. We buy compost commercially. We got to be careful. Now, commercial compost, you should look at the ingredients likewise.
Yes. Most of them are blends. However, I have talked to one of the major manufacturers, the QA, the quality assurance person for this company, and they have a whole wide range of several different lines of products. But the cheapest stuff that you normally find in the garden shops and nurseries, he even said, you know, this is not the best grade of compost. And if you look, there's a lot of large pieces. It's not composted fully. And one of the other things I might tell people is when they get their compost, and even the good stuff I have, a sign that compost has been pretty well composted is that it's fine and it'll go through a screen. So I sift all of my compost.
Do you?
Yes. And
you are a
I'm geek, yes. As a matter of fact, I am right in the middle of building what's called a trommel, which is a large rotating sifter that will let me do it on large scale. Because I said, I get truckloads of this and
really?
I have to run it through. So this will save me a lot of time. But anyone having it, if you sift it through like a quarter inch mesh, and you can easily build out of cutting up a 2x4, 8 foot long into 2 foot sections and making a square and tacking a little quarter inch hardware cloth onto it, make a nice little sifter for yourself, and that will get rid of the big chunks. And then those big chunks you can throw into your compost pile, break them down, and you can just keep going that process. So you're always using just the nice fine
compost.
Yeah, the nice fine stuff. Yeah.
Very good. And that's what specialty gardening
mm-hmm.
is about.
Yep.
Especially with vegetable gardening. Do you grow flowers and things like that? Or some probably, but you don't use your good compost on your flowers.
Well,
or a little bit.
I grow edible flowers.
I guess.
So like nasturtiums, they're not quite as tasty for a lot of people, or marigolds, because they're a little peppery. But those are good, and they can be used as a garnish, sprinkled on salads and stuff to add a little bit of color. Other things like pansies during the cool months are very pretty, very edible, and the entire plant you could eat, but the flowers in particular, they really garnish a salad, and I'll throw a bunch of those into, like, my green smoothies or things like that.
Green smoothies, or even you can use them in your Italian dishes, your sauces.
Yes.
And things like that.
And other things like sage, for example, pineapple sage has got these very pretty, colorful red flowers. They attract hummingbirds and so on. So very, very nice. So, yes, I do grow flowers in a sense, but they all, for the most part, tend to be edible.
Now, water conservation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recommendations or thoughts on that? Because we all are very aware of each water district has great demands on reduction of water.
Right. You know, I'll point out a couple of things, especially here in California. A lot of the water districts, the LA Metropolitan Water District, the Orange County Metropolitan Water District, they are all encouraging turf removal programs, getting rid of your grass, which is a very high usage of water, and you can replace that either with drought-tolerant plants, which use very little water, or edibles. And one of the interesting things is that edibles are, for the most part, exempt from the watering restrictions, because even though they use more water than a drought-tolerant plant, they use significantly less water in producing food for you than if you were to buy it commercially from something that was commercially grown.
Now, I know some of, and Greg, I really appreciate you coming out here today, because I know you've been suffering from a severe cough here, but you sound a lot better.
Yeah, a lot better than
Don't
I was
worry
a few weeks
about
ago.
It, yeah. Folks, he's doing well, and we really appreciate him coming today for our listeners here. But when we're talking about, when you mean edibles,
mm-hmm.
do you mean, for example, a vegetable garden?
Well, edible landscaping is one of the things I talk on a lot. I have edible landscaping in my front yard, and that's different than what I grow in the backyard, which
sure.
is edible, but it is not landscaping.
It's
looks very technical in a sense, but you can a lot of people don't realize a lot of your edible plants, Swiss chard, most of your herbs in that are just gorgeous plants, and so they make a very nice landscape. As a matter of fact, tomatoes for the longest time were only grown as an ornamental. People actually thought the fruit was poisonous until, well, roughly 150 years ago or so in America.
So
if they, you know, thought it was pretty then, there, you just have to realize that edible landscaping is a little bit more work, because if it's something you enjoy eating, it's also something that maybe rabbits or something else, or maybe neighbors. But I've not really had any problem with actually any of those things, and there's some tricks that you can use. But the nice thing is, with edible landscaping, you tend to go to a drip water system, which uses way less water. I use a lot of sub-irrigation techniques, which really minimizes evaporation, so that you're going to get maximum yield with very little water usage.
Can I interrupt you mm-hmm. for a minute? Just wanted to let our listeners know that, again, we are tuned in to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Okay, back we go.
No
I'm
problem.
Sorry to interrupt. But I have heard in the past, now it may be changing, that many cities do not allow vegetable type of plants in front yards.
That's, once again, that is changing, especially with the drought conditions.
Right.
They're allowing that. But the other thing is, especially with the drought-tolerant landscaping, this has definitely been encouraged on a very strong level for people to adopt. And so now the mindset is there that you can have something other than just grass in your front yard. And once that mindset has been broken, whether it's drought tolerant or it's edible landscaping, it's both perfectly acceptable.
Would you,
it just has to look good.
Yeah, and would you recommend as a result that our listeners, if they're planning to change from a grass environment to something else, they may want to check with their city to see if that is acceptable?
Yes, you always want to check with that, but once again, under these, at least in California, under the current drought conditions, it is more than acceptable at this point in time, but you always want to get approval. And even like I live in an HOA, so homeowners association,
right.
So I had to submit my plans to what I want to do, because no matter what it is, it should look nice, should be attractive to your neighbors, and so on. So,
right. So good advice,
yeah.
There. Check with your city,
yes.
to do something. Now, along that line, for example, I've had a number of people ask me, well, gee, I've got grass and I've also got a lot of fruit trees, mm-hmm. in my front yard. And both of them require lots of water. And what I have told them, and you can correct me, especially if you have a better solution, you can get rid of your grass. But use drip irrigation for your fruit trees. But you may have some other solutions.
One other thing, it's not too expensive, but you can, well, a couple of things that people can do is, one, people tend to let trees grow much larger than they need to be.
Right.
So by keeping it pruned down to like 5 to 7 feet in height, you can always, it's only high enough to be where you can get to the fruit easily.
You can reach it.
And most people grow way more fruit than they need to at that point in time, because they're always giving it out to neighbors and that. So you might be better off with a better variety, more trees. And one thing that I recommend, and if they, for our local listeners in the Irvine area, they go to the Farm and Food Lab, they'll see a whole bunch of trees that are what's called espaliered, where they're pruned so they can go against a flat surface like a wall. And that gives a lot of fruit, more than enough for an average family, just in a small amount of space. And using that area that would be an ugly wall, and it could be lush and green with fruit coming
gotcha.
From it.
Great advice.
Another thing is there are things called irrigation stakes, and there's another technique that's a high pressure thing. These are irrigation things that you bury them under the ground in the root system on the outer edge, not real close to the tree, but a few feet away, typically what would be in line with the drip line of a standard tree. And this works well for espaliered trees as well. And since they're underground and go down, the water is being placed directly where the roots are, or even a little lower, which encourages the roots to grow down to get water as opposed to going up to the surface for
and
water.
Providing support for your tree as a result.
Oh, the roots, yes.
The roots.
If the root system, sometimes as we have, the roots won't go much further than 2 feet because they just hit
right.
bedrock. But it does encourage that better root establishment, and because the water's all underground, nothing is lost due to evaporation, and it's a very nice way of irrigating,
gotcha.
As far as trees go.
I know as far as water conservation goes, in a landscape, if you have lawn, oftentimes the person who cuts your grass, if you don't do it yourself, only wants you to water frequently, but in short segments.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, nothing
yes.
goes down.
And that brings,
and there's a great deal of evaporation.
Yeah, and that brings up another thing which is very important for water conservation and for your plant's health. is that all different plants have different watering needs. As you mentioned, trees want to be watered deeply but infrequently, and something like grass or even most edible plants need to be watered frequently because their root systems are all in like the top 6 inches of soil.
Sure.
So the concept of having a water control system on a timer with different, what we call hydrozones, but basically each zone is timed differently. And if you have that for the different types of plants and you understand the plant's watering needs, and these zones aren't just different areas of the yard, they can be in the same area. It's just that this particular plant, especially on a drip system, may get watered once, maybe even twice a day during hot times during the summer, whereas your trees might get it once or twice a week, but at a very higher frequency. And other plants that are more drought tolerant may only get a small amount on the surface once a week. So by having those hydrozones, you can save water and actually have healthier plants, because if you water heavily on something that doesn't need a lot of water, they actually will suffer.
Now, Greg, as we're talking about specialty vegetable gardening, one thing that has changed over the past 30 years in Southern California is it used to be that we had large lots and small houses. Now we seem to have large houses on small lots.
Yeah.
How can, do you have any suggestions or for our listeners as to how our people can grow vegetables in a small yard?
Absolutely. That's one of my specialties, is teaching people how to grow in very small spaces. And one of the things I'd like to point out, and this is also a good water tip, is I use what's called a SIP very heavily. This is a sub-irrigation planter. Sometimes they're mistakenly called self-watering systems, but the idea is that there's actually a container, and this doesn't necessarily have to be just a pot. It can be an entire garden bed.
Uh-huh.
But the way that it works is that there's some space down in the bottom where you have something that's perforated to allow air in a water reservoir that will contain the water, won't leak down through to the ground. And the soil goes on top of that and then wicks up from the water wicks up from the bottom. And if you ever walk around malls or whatever, you see large garden pots, you might see a plastic PVC pipe sticking in.
Absolutely.
And these are what they do, is they pour the water into that, it goes down into the bottom, and then there's enough space where the roots aren't, there's like something separating it, usually like a grate or something, with just a tiny bit of soil touching the water, and the water slowly but surely wicks up and saturates, and so the plants get even soil. They get lots of air in the roots because of that spacing, so the roots have the air they need. Because a good soil will have 25% air, 25% water, and then 50% a combination of organic and inorganic material.
And it sounds like there's no evaporation involved.
And there's no evaporation, yes. Any water loss is strictly through transpiration, maybe off the surface, but if you put a good layer of mulch around whatever you have, that'll minimize that as well.
So are you talking a raised bed type of?
Not necessarily. The people who just want to get started out and start small, one of my favorite things is 5-gallon buckets, and they're free. You can go to like a local store delicatessen or a bakery or a donut shop. The plastic buckets are used for the fillings that they get their fillings in. And if you are nice and be very polite and ask,
maybe buy something.
Maybe buy something on occasion. And just ask them to save them. Don't expect them that week because they throw them out typically. And so now you have an opportunity to reuse it. And I've seen where you can put like burlap around it, or if you have small kids, have them paint and decorate the outside so they look nice. But I grow all sorts of things. I grow almost all of my tomatoes that way, all my cucumbers, all my zucchinis and so on, because zucchinis can take over a yard or a garden if you don't. So by putting them there, and one of the nice things is a lot of people have their garages and they don't actually have cars in the garage. They're just a storage. Since it's a 5 gallon pot, they can actually be in front of it and be decorative and then moved out of the way when you actually need to True. Get into the garage. So you can grow. I have a large driveway, in a sense, including a back area because it's like RV storage, but I don't have an RV. And I have roughly 50 to 60 buckets right now that I just use that for growing.
As a an aside along that line, how wide are these? What's the diameter or the?
I would say probably 15 inches.
15 to 17 inches.
Yeah, nothing to, you know, it's a regular 5 gallon bucket like you see at the hardware stores or whatever. But instead of paying $5 a piece for them, just over time you can accumulate them. What a typical system that I encourage people to do is you take a 5 gallon bucket. This is a self-contained one. It's a good way to start. And you grab a colander. You can get them for 99 cents at the 99 cent store. Cut the rim off the colander so it'll fit inside the bucket, upside down. Mm. That's your air space that I was talking about.
Yes.
About an inch and a half up, you drill a hole on each side, and that's an overflow, so you're not drowning the plant. If you have put too much water, you just watch where it goes. And then a little hole in the colander in which you can put either a piece of PVC, like a 1.5 inch PVC pipe going up to the top of the bucket, or you can even, if you want to reuse water bottles, you can take and cut the bottom off two water bottles, nest them together, and that'll make a filled pipe.
Could you do me a favor in our listeners?
Mm-hmm.
Could you repeat that process in case somebody missed it?
I'll do it. And the thing is, this is not a unique idea to me. Some of my designs are unique, but they can look on the internet just like 5 gallon garden bucket or 5 gallon self-watering buckets, 5 gallon sub-irrigation plant or SIP, and they'll find lots of ideas and instructions for that. But very easily, just take a regular 5 gallon bucket, you drill two holes, usually on the opposite sides, as drain holes about an inch and a half up. You take a colander, inexpensive colander, plastic colander, cut the edges off of it, and it should fit right inside the bottom of the bucket. This is not rocket science, so it doesn't have to be perfect. As a matter of fact, you can even take an empty quart or half-gallon plastic milk bottle and just poke a whole bunch of holes in it and just put a couple of those in the bottom, and that will be fine. Because all you're doing is separating the water from this area and creating an air pocket down there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put your then you have your fill tube, which doesn't have to be there, but it just makes it easier. I mean, you could actually water from the top and then just let it soak down, but with the fill tube, the water goes directly down into the reservoir. And
sure.
I usually cut a hole in whatever it is that I have separating the colanders or the milk bottles just so it goes down. Be PVC pipe, but it, once again, a couple of plastic water bottles where the top bottoms are cut off and then nested together would make a perfect fill pipe as well.
And you could do these on patios?
Yes, you can put them anywhere.
Apartments can do it. So people that have stopped gardening but would like to really have the ability to do it cheaply.
Right.
And if you're like me, I say I'm frugal. My wife says I'm cheap,
mm-hmm.
but it's good common sense and something that you can make look good as a result.
Yeah, if it's outside. The ones that I have, since I'm growing so much and it's behind a fence so my neighbors don't see my buckets, they're just plain buckets, but they work really, really well. And I can grow, I've got maybe 10 or 12 different varieties of tomatoes growing because I can grow a different variety in each bucket instead of having one plant sprawl all over the place. Another thing is you can get either the standard cages or I take what's called remesh, which is a concrete reinforcing cloth. You can get it at any hardware store. And that I make into circles and it goes up and that's what I grow. It's like a trellis.
So you grow up rather than
out. I grow up
wide,
rather than out, yes.
Yeah.
For tomatoes and cucumbers and things that are vining, for things that aren't vining, like zucchini, for example, once again, a bucket is a perfect thing because it keeps it isolated. A zucchini actually looks very pretty, so
it spills over.
Yeah, and it spills over.
Spilling over makes helps the attractiveness.
Right. So any sort of covering that you might, like I said, burlap is a nice covering that people use often on these things. And it'll look very nice even if it was in the front yard.
Yeah.
And zucchinis produce tons. One plant will give the average family more zucchini than they know what to do with.
And maybe your neighbors walking by will pick their own on their way.
Possibly. At least not. In the neighborhood where I'm at, it's pretty good. And a lot of times what you do if you're concerned about neighbors taking things that you don't want, you put the plants that tend to not be associated with as food, like herbs closer to the sidewalk, and some of these other ones like tomatoes and zucchinis, they might be further back if they're part of your edible garden.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Yes. Anything else on beds? Do you have any raised beds, for example?
The classic square foot gardening bed is 4 foot by 4 foot, divided into 1 foot square, so 16 square foot. And I have 12 of those in my backyard. Yes, so I grow
you
a lot.
You must be feeding a lot of neighbors.
I stagger a lot of them. I also use some of them, like I said, since I'm a gardening geek and I want to try like different soils or different combinations, I will use sometimes many of them doing A-B split testing where I might put one type of soil in one type in the other, plant the exact same thing, and then see how each one does. And
along that line, peat moss is kind of a controversial thing about the availability, et cetera. I know I don't think there's any real question about the ability to get it or it's not going to be gone, but there are a lot of people looking for different products to use rather than peat moss to both hold and expel water compost is not a real stable product.
No, it is not.
And it helps give structure to the soil. Have you found anything else that works for you?
The most common thing that people are using as an alternative is coconut core.
Yes,
which is considered to be a renewable product. It is much more expensive than peat moss. It's a little harder to work with. It breaks down a little faster. You can do a web search and look at the pros and cons of peat moss versus coconut core. One of the other nice things, especially for us in Southern California, is that peat moss is very acidic compared to coconut core even. And we tend to have very alkaline soil. Although having a raised bed, we control all that. That being said, I personally, and once again, this is a personal choice, so I just find peat moss easier to get a hold of, easier to use, and a lot cheaper than coconut core. So I'm still using peat moss. According to the peat moss manufacturers, there is way more enough peat moss that we're not going to run out anytime soon or that. But once again, you can take that with a grain of salt, because whether or not we have another renewable alternative other than coconut core.
That's there.
That's basically what I heard also.
And I know once you put peat moss and vermiculite or something like that in your soil, especially vermiculite, it stays there.
Yes, peat moss was what they consider recalcitrant. It's very prone to not breaking down. So it is not something that once you get it in there, it'll last a long time.
Just renew the nutrient value of your soil with your compost.
Right.
Good point. Anything more on beds or other things you would like to talk about?
I'll give somebody else another little tip. If they find that doing the buckets is a little too hard, this would be a lot of fun during the summer. is to, instead of putting the doing the bucket system, you take a children's wading pool and you drill a couple of holes. And you know, they're very cheap. This time of year, you can get them for under $10, a 5-foot pool or something
sure.
like that. And then the key thing there is you put about an inch and a half up, you put a couple of drain holes, maybe four of them in the pool. So there's not too much water mm-hmm. going to be in it. And if you get more than an inch and a half, it'll go.
So all you really do want is about an inch and a half.
All you want is about an inch and a half.
And the holes are to remove excess water.
Right. Yeah, they're draining. So you know that when you see the water coming out the holes, you have enough. It'd be better if it's level, but that, you know.
Of course.
Because it
would That's
drain.
Hard
yeah.
to do something.
Sometimes it's hard to do, but sometimes you can shim it up with bricks or something
sure.
like that to get something flat. And then you go out and you get either grow bags or just recyclable shopping bags that are breathable. The fabric can go through. And with this, what happens is you fill this with soil, and a lot of times what I like to do is actually put those milk cartons or that inverted colander in the bottom of the bag itself.
Mm-hmm.
And not plugging the store per se, but these bags are as cheap as 50 cents a piece at places like Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a breathable. You just want to make sure it's not a plastic coated fabric because air has to get through
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha.
Now you set that in your pool, maybe with a little space between bags, and you fill those with soil, and then you can put about 3 inches of pea gravel on top around the bags, and I'll get to why the pea gravel, and then you fill it up with water until you see the water coming out through the drain holes. Once again, the water's going to go through the bag, it's going to wick up, and it's going to water your plants, so you can plant a whole little garden there, and you can put this out in your front yard for the summer or something like that, or your backyard if you're not sure you want a permanent garden. Very inexpensive way to try it out. And once you have that, the one thing that with standing water might be a concern is mosquitoes or moss growing. But since you put the 3 inches of pea gravel, all the water's several inches below that, so it just keeps the mosquitoes out and keeps the moss away and just keeps a nice irrigation factor. And you have a nice reservoir.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a great
yeah.
method.
And I have variations on that I do where I actually have sort of a square system that I built, but it's the same thing. It's just this layer of water down at the bottom, very little evaporation. Once again, the pea gravel also keeps the sun from allowing it to evaporate and stuff.
That's one of the best ideas I've heard. And it should be especially apparent with our water saving
mm-hmm.
Issues
yeah.
here.
I mentioned that the shopping bags, but these grow bags, if you people search online, they'll find a lot of different people who manufacture them. They're made out of landscape fabric. It's heavy. It's breathable. And they can get them in 1 gallon sizes all the way up to 300 gallon sizes. Very huge. And I use a lot of 5, 10, 20, and 30 gallon ones myself for a lot of things I grow in. One of the advantages of the fabric bags is, unlike plastic containers where the roots grow round and round and get root bound,
right.
When they hit air, they stop growing and they'll go back and grow inside. So you get a very heavy root concentration throughout the entire soil structure instead of becoming root bound that they might do in a normal plastic thing. I also drill holes, large holes, which I line with landscape fabric on a lot of my buckets for that same reason, so that you have the air pruning take place.
To me, that sounds like something too for young families.
Absolutely.
And their children, to give
yeah.
them an introduction of where their vegetables come
yeah.
from, where their food comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, there are too many young children today that think everything comes from Ralph's or Walmart
yeah.
or Vaughn's or
yeah.
things like that. But it tastes so much better.
Yes.
Now, that's another thing. Homegrown tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they say? about that. The only two things money can't buy, true love and homegrown tomatoes. Do you have any advice on tomatoes?
No, other than I like a variety. I would recommend if anybody's starting out that they start with one of the smaller tomatoes, like cherry tomatoes, the grape tomatoes, the little pear-shaped tomatoes. I like the pear-shaped, yellow pear-shaped tomatoes because they look like little light bulbs to me.
That's right, they do.
And so those are attractive. The nice thing about the small tomatoes is they ripen quicker and will stay ripe throughout a longer growing season. Big tomatoes take a long time to get to size and to ripen. So, you know, like if you start late in the summer, you might not actually get any ripe tomatoes.
Gotcha.
Because it'll get too cold for them to go. So for a family, and the small ones will ripen very quickly compared to the other ones. So if you have small children, that would be a good thing. Another thing, if they're starting out and they're growing something people haven't tried, they're called bush beans versus the pole beans.
Yes.
And they only get in, I usually like containing them in a little bit of a frame, but they only get about 2.5, maybe 3 feet, but usually 2 to 2.5 foot high, have tons of beans. Something a lot of people don't realize is the entire plant is edible, so even before it grows up, you can let the kids nibble on a leaf, and it'll taste like a bean
And pick their own.
But you can pick fresh beans, and beans and peas during the cool season months are things that kids generally like to eat, so that's a good thing to start with kids.
You bet. Good advice along those lines.
One other thing I'd like to point out is that if it sounds intimidating putting together this garden mix, this is not rocket science. I'm a geek. I take it way to the extreme. Nobody needs to do all the things I do. And just going out, there's a lot of really good mixes that garden centers, they can direct you to a good mix for vegetables and stuff. So at least when you're starting out, that's a nice, easy way to start.
You bet. Because that's one of the things I always hear when I give square foot gardening workshop. Where can I get this? Well, you can get them at, you can get this, the square foot gardening mix at Lowe's or Home Depot, but you have to get it online.
Mm-hmm.
They don't stock it.
Right.
But they will get it for you in any quantities you want. But there are plenty of others also.
Right.
And I don't like to list names, but there are good ones out there.
Yes, there are good ones. So.
And ask your nurserymen which is the best.
Yeah. Just a word of warning, this is where you're going to be spending your money, though. So it is important to invest in a good quality soil that you pay back. And if you find something with pumice and peat moss, versus maybe pumice and vermiculite, pumice and perlite, peat moss and perlite, that's usually going to indicate that it's probably a little bit better potting soil.
Good point.
Yeah.
I'm not too much of a pumice advocate because it doesn't stay in the soil. It rises
to the top. So that's the perlite. Pumice is the heavy rock.
You're right.
The reason the perlite is used is because it's light and cheap, but it tends to rise. It looks like a white popcorn, yes.
Yeah.
The pumice is the rock, yeah.
Well, we've got about a minute or two to go. We can take a couple minutes. But if you might have some parting advice for our gardeners, anything else that was important to you to want to talk about today?
I think we covered most topics. I just want to let people know once again, it's a passion with me. My wife says it's an obsession with me. So I take things to the extreme. You can start out with one bucket. You can start out with that little wading pool just filled with bags of potting soil to get things started. You don't have to go overboard. You don't have to commit. Just start growing something. If you have a yard and you want to try edible gardening, go and find some herbs that you like to eat or plants that you like to eat, and just find some spots, hopefully sunny spots in the yard, and just put something in there. Most of the herbs will do pretty well in just regular soil, so put them in and watch them go. Rosemary is all over the place. That's a good one to start with. I love French tarragon. There's just so many. As I mentioned, pineapple sage, very pretty, grows very well. And so on.
Along that line, if you have any questions, the website for the UC Master Gardeners is www.uccemg.com. I'll repeat that, www.uccemg.com. And if you are having any particular problems that you don't seem to have an answer from your local nurseryman, remember, Master Gardeners are part of the Cooperative Extension. And the Cooperative Extension is a part of the University of California, and the scientists at University of California have answers to a great deal of our issues. But you can contact our Master Gardener hotline, and its website is hotline@uccemg.com, and they will be glad to be of assistance to you. And if you can send any pictures, if you have any pest problems that are an issue, check our website under pests and or contact the hotline. They'll be more than happy to help you along that line. And again, we are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Our In the Garden show is on every week, every Thursday morning, 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. And become a regular listener. You'll find out a lot of things from especially people like our special guest today, Greg Stevenson, Master Gardener. We generally have people on that are experts in the area. Greg is an expert, and I'm really pleased to have gotten to know him as a Master Gardener, even though I knew him beforehand. And Greg, do you have any parting words? But thank you for being aboard.
No, thank you for having me. It's been enjoyable. No, go out and grow something, and if you are going to water something, I have the personal opinion that if you're going to water it, you might as well be able to eat it.
I like that, too. And if you're going to grow it in your yard, you should be able to eat it. Thank you very much, listeners. Tune in next week. We'll have a great program for you.